Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning, and I am delighted to welcome Cindy Auten from the Telework Exchange. Cindy, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks for having me.
And Paul Rowson from World at Work. Paul, welcome to Fed Talk.
Good to be here, Bill. Thanks.
Today we're going to be talking about telework, and we're going to talk about the new telework legislation. We're going to talk about OPM's policies and as they're being developed. We're going to be talking about what agencies are doing on telework. And we're going to talk about that new OPM announcement a few weeks ago about the unscheduled telework, unscheduled leave policy and the changes. We're going to be talking about the good things about telework, the caution areas, how agencies should develop policies. Before we get into that, I'd like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. Cindy, tell me a little bit about the Telework Exchange before we get into all of that. What do you do at the Telework Exchange?
Sure. So we're a public-private partnership and online community, and our mission is to advance telework in the government. We specifically focus on helping federal agencies build their telework programs and look at both management policy issues and technology issues.
Okay, but you're not the government.
Not the government.
But you're focused completely on government.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Paul, tell me about World at Work.
Bill, World at Work is a global human resources association. We're a not-for-profit association, and our real goal is to focus on helping the people in our profession with their career development, design, develop, help implement, and lead what we call total rewards. That covers compensation, benefits, work life, which we're going to talk about today, and other forms of rewards which help employers attract, motivate, and retain a talented workforce.
Okay. Well, telework's been in the news a lot lately, and I'm sure there are people who would like to have telework who don't. There's some who may have had it taken away from them who think that's unfair. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to discuss your telework situation, please feel free to give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Cindy, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about just the current landscape for telework for federal employees.
Sure. So we've seen 2010 was a really dynamic year for telework, and we're going to see this continue to grow in 2011. As far as the standard goes for telework, there really hasn't been a standard up until this point. It's been agencies have been doing what they can to allow telework until the bill came along, and the bill was passed and signed into law late December.
Okay, and it's pretty clear that President Obama and OPM Director John Berry support expanding telework.
Absolutely, and with this administration, we've seen a lot of key drivers that have been really driving telework, reducing real estate, sustainability. Clearly, the snowstorms last year put telework in the news with supporting overall government operations, efficiency, productivity.
Paul, I hear things about the telework that there's so many people who are theoretically eligible to telework and so few of them who actually do currently. Do you have a theory on why that's the case? First of all, do you agree with that premise? And then secondly, if you do, do you have a theory on why so few people telework currently of those who might be eligible for it?
Well, first of all, just because a job is conducive to teleworking doesn't mean that the worker or the manager together can structure a good telework agreement. There's a lot of factors that go into whether or not telework can be successful, and it's not dependent solely on the job description. And I think often companies rush in thinking that just because a job appears to be teleworkable, that everybody should be entitled to telework. And we've found that that just simply doesn't work. There's other more critical elements that go into the equation that need to be considered and factored for that relationship to be successful.
And can you give me an idea what some of those elements are?
Oh, sure. First of all, I think there has to be a culture of trust already that it pre-exists the telework agreement. And if the manager doesn't currently trust the employee, and that might be around performance, that may be around the person's ability to work independently. There may be signs. They may be new in the job. The manager may have a staff that he can't let everyone telework because there are certain things that need to happen. All those factors can contribute to the fact that not everyone can telework who's teleworkable.
But I hear, Paul, when you say that, I hear in response from, especially from the federal sector labor unions and others who support telework, that a lot of managers are just old-fashioned. They just want to see the employee, that really isn't what's necessary. How do you draw that line between somebody who just doesn't want to get with the program, a manager who doesn't want to get with the program, and a manager who really has a legitimate concern about whether the employee will produce on a telework assignment?
Well, I think that's where policies come in place. Policies do support an environment that, and a culture that you want. I think second of all, you know, we've seen that it's very important that you have senior management buy-in. If a manager knows that their manager is expecting this as a result and is actually building into the manager's performance review performance factor for that manager saying, look, if you can prove to me that you can manage people by results, not by proximity, I'm going to look at you and reward you yourself differently. We've seen that, especially in the private sector, be a very important element of nudging this culture forward.
Yeah. Hey, Cindy, you said, I think, when you talk about what you do, that you help federal agencies with their telework programs. And I guess that for several years now, at least, a number of federal agencies have had some pretty good telework programs. Is that your experience?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've been working with telework since 2005 and seen just a tremendous growth, and some agencies have been really advancing their programs.
And the gold standard that I keep hearing about is the Patent and Trademark Office has a substantial number of employees who work telework, some of them nearly full time. Can you give me some other examples where you think telework, the kinds of structure for telework that succeeded?
Sure. One other example besides the Patent and Trademark Office is a DOD agency, DISA, Defense Information Systems Agency. Interesting case of how they're leveraging telework is due to the base realignment and closure. They're moving over to Fort Meade, and only 30% of their employees said that they were interested in taking that commute or relocating their families. So they leverage telework to retain those employees, as well as setting up a telework center in Fort Meade to actually recruit new employees while they're moving their offices. They took a look at the management issue. Management is the number one issue, I think, to resistance, a fear of losing control over employees. And they put telework as a part of management performance reviews. They had senior management support for telework. And they set up an option to make management really look at telework. They made everyone eligible to telework.
And everyone.
Everyone.
And what about customer service people?
Well, what they did was is that originally they would say, okay, managers, you have to tell us who's eligible to telework. And managers that didn't want to offer a program would say, well, that's easy. It's no one. So what they did is they flipped it on its ear and said, okay, we're going to do the reverse. Everyone's eligible to telework, and you have to specifically say why certain individuals wouldn't be eligible to telework. So just everyone's opted in, and then managers have to say who would not be eligible. So
and
it makes them really look at the issue.
They'd have to give a justification.
As opposed to just saying zero.
Okay. I notice that both of you are here in the studio today. You're not teleworking. one of the issues that was came up with my assistant this morning, she was telling me that she took yesterday off and tried to work from home, and her 18-month-old was kind of distracting her a bit during the day, so she really wasn't able to fully engage, although she got a lot of work done from her home. How do you prevent someone from having a home work environment, if they're teleworking from home, that's very distracting and gets in the way of productivity? Either of you could answer that question, or maybe both of you.
When you're building the telework agreement and manager and employee, you have to have clear communications about, is the environment itself conducive to telework? Or is a hoteling situation better if you're working in a local office as opposed to working at home? Are you free of distractions? And telework really isn't a substitute for dependent care on a regular telework program. And that's something that has to really be communicated to the employees.
And do you know if the programs, the telework programs that the federal government's coming up with now, if that issue is being addressed, is anybody looking at the environment?
I do believe OPM is actually looking into this and looking at some of the best cases in the federal government. They have employee where they do look at the environment and make sure that there are it's a safe and secure environment. We do want to protect data and make sure that no equipment is harmed and people are working in a good telework environment.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about telework with Cindy Auten and Paul Rousen.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host. I'm talking to Cindy Auten and Paul Rousen about telework. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. We were talking before the break about management resistance, and Cindy, has your organization taken a look at that? Is that a real issue, or is it? And what's if it is, what's the cause?
It is. It's a top priority for us to look at this cultural resistance to telework. We conducted research a few years ago with the Federal Managers Association, and looked at what were management's issues with telework, and the number one issue was the fear of losing control over the employees. I'm not sure how to manage employees in this type of environment. And one of the things that we found was as management became more exposed to telework, meaning they had teleworkers or telework themselves, they became much more favorable to it. They saw it firsthand, the benefits of it. So one of the key recommendations we had would be to, obviously, you have to implement management training, and that's what the bill includes, management training. But then you also have to provide management-specific pilot programs so they can see what it's like to work in this environment, how to collaborate. And then the third piece of it is technology, and we'll get into technology, is having these tools, these collaboration tools that can help when you're working with a distributed workforce.
One of the things I would think might be a subject of management resistance would be the fear managers would think that the employee, once they had telework, they couldn't take it away from them, even if it became a problem. In other words, that sense of entitlement that seems to be out there in some parts of the federal government. Was that an issue at all in your research?
You know, it never came up, but we have heard of this before, of building it into the policy to make sure that there's an opportunity for the management, both the management and employee, to review the program and say, is this working for me? And not and being able to have the management revisit it. It goes along the lines of trust and clear communications. Management's really going to have to set out with their employees.
You know, Paul, you mentioned that right at the beginning, the trust. Is there a way to deal with this, avoiding this sense of entitlement if it would develop and allowing a manager to retain control over the workplace if it's necessary?
Yeah, Bill, there is. There's some actual very prescriptive steps that an organization can take, and World at Work has researched and documented this and found these factors to be true. But if you're going to try to build trust, first of all, what we found is that you know, it's very, very good at first just to come to an agreement with the employee of who is really standing on firm ground and is capable of working independently with minimal guidance. And then once you've had that discussion, the next step is to work with that employee to set up a what I would call a telework agreement. And that telework agreement will really cover all the things that you will provide the employee, all the things that you'll expect in return. And it also includes an exit strategy if this isn't working, and that's agreed to up front. Therefore, when something happens and it derails, you at least can refer back to that document and say, this is what we agreed upon. And that makes it a little less contentious.
And that's for every employee who teleworks?
That really works well for every employee. I mean, it's the same thing you'd have when you sit down with every employee and sit down and talk about their performance and what your expectations are. You would certainly roll this in. You certainly wouldn't let someone go. And if I was an employee, quite frankly, in this day and age when jobs are at risk, I would not want to leave the office in fear of losing my visibility. I'd want to get some assurances on the back end.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've heard about, that particularly younger employees who are coming in and very, very the sense of great mobility, and they can work anywhere because they're tied to their computer more than to an office, that they really don't learn how the skill of working in an office. And I guess if you're away, then you would gradually not have that skill as much as you might if you were in an office. Have either of you taken a look at that issue, whether that's a problem with teleworking?
We have.
And how to overcome it?
We have. And I think when you really take a look at the young professional who's just coming out into the workforce, they're really not looking as much for telework as they are looking for flexibility. We've seen some organizations tout telework as a key attraction, but what we find is that new college graduate really is looking and has earned that desk, and they want that desk. They want to have interaction with their workers. They want to come in at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they want to leave at 3 o'clock and be on the softball field out on the mall. They're looking for flexible work more than they are always just telework, because they're too interested in networking. They have social networking tools, but they also want to have FaceTime with their manager and FaceTime with their colleagues.
And I think we have to keep in mind that when we talk about telework, we're not talking about 100% virtual environment where you send your employees away and you never see them again. When we talk about telework, we're talking about a few days a week. It will help offset congestion, all of the benefits that we're seeing. But then you still get that where you don't feel completely isolated, especially if you are entering the workforce.
And that was going to be my next question to you, Cindy. It probably should have been the first question. What does it mean to telework? When are you teleworking and when are you not?
The latest definition would be working in an alternative location, whether secure alternative location, during your agency or business hours. So teleworking wouldn't be considered working on nights or weekends. That would be one of what you would call maybe an unofficial telework.
I frequently telework at nights. Mm-hmm. That's not the definition. How many days a week should you be teleworking to really be a teleworker? Is there a standard for that?
Well, we're hoping to have more of a standard. You want more regular telework, and more regular telework will really help with agency savings. 2 to 3 days a week, the frequency, you can really start to have more agency benefits. You don't want to have a telework one day a month. Then when you get into situations where it's a business continuity situation, you want it to be regular and reoccurring, so people are comfortable working in a remote environment.
I think that's probably one of the biggest benefits of a teleworking policy is that if there is a government shutdown, if this is another terrorist attack, we will have the ability to continue government operations. It'll be easier to do that if we have more teleworkers. Paul, have you looked into that at all? Is that a true statement? I mean, it seems to make sense.
Oh, there's no question. If you were to take a look at last year's snowstorm, basically, people fumbled around for 4 days wondering, should I be working? Can I be working? How will I get paid? So having a telework policy for unscheduled leave and scheduled leave really allows you to keep your workforce engaged. And I think, work still exists when you come back. So you may get a 4-day snow break, but the fact of the matter is work piles up. And that in itself creates stress on the workers and the managers. So you think about what telework provides well beyond just cost savings. It has a lot to do with the employee's engagement level and just trusting that employee to work when the government isn't working because they're professionals says a lot for any company in terms of the culture that they've created.
And what about OPM's new policy, this new language when we have snow here in Washington and the government decides to close or have an alternative way of employees working. So like it used to be unscheduled leave. Before that, it's called something else, and it keeps changing. What the current policy, I think, is unscheduled leave, unscheduled telework.
That's correct.
Can you tell me about that, Cindy? How's that working?
Sure. Well, I think they announced it, and then they had the first trial maybe the day after, where they were able to announce unscheduled leave, unscheduled telework. It's a fresh idea too. Continuity of operations. It's the, you know, I think John Barry put it perfectly when he said that the president had said, we want to keep government operations running. And we don't want the government to shut down. And if there is an opportunity for to include in telework to the miss, it's great. And from an employee standpoint, just as Paul said, the work piles up. And I think employees want to make sure that they stay on top of, and be productive and flexible.
So if Paul said you should have a telework agreement and all of this and some formality, what if you don't have that and you have this unscheduled leave, unscheduled telework? Could you take it upon yourself to telework if you had the means to do that? Give you an example. I'm not a teleworker. I don't have an agreement, but I hear there's going to be a snowstorm, so I bring some work home that I can, and I kind of manage my work so that I can do a project for the next day, so that I don't have to drive if the road conditions are bad. Would that fit into the unscheduled telework? And how would that, as a practical matter, how would that work out?
Sure. And this is one of the things that the bill addresses. So every agency has
this. Is the new legislation?
Yes, right. The business continuity. So telework will be integrated into agencies' existing business continuity plan. So outlining mission critical operations, who has to come in, and what do other people do in this environment? But absolutely. I mean, I think in these situations, it means the idea of being flexible, productive, and efficient.
Because as I understand OPM's policy, you have to be a teleworker to have an unscheduled telework day. Otherwise, you have to take unscheduled leave. Is that correct, or is it more flexible than that?
I don't know, actually, if that's the case or not. And I know that OPM is reviewing all of their guidance based on the legislation and making sure that everything is connected. But I guess urge people now to defer to their business continuity plans, their agency's business continuity plans.
And all of
plans.
This is going to be changing in federal agencies.
It's a moving target.
Very busy, Cindy. helping people
it's a
get
busy,
their plans in.
Busy start to the new year for sure.
Now, Paul, you were talking earlier about cost savings. Just what are the cost savings for telework? I mean, how real is that?
Well, we've got plenty of examples from both the private and now even the public sector and the federal government. And we've had partnerships with a group called the Telework Research Network, and we believe from what we've seen, from the research we've seen out of that group, is that the new bill could save the government over $7,000 per commuter.
Wow.
Per telecommuter. And so, you know, the bottom line from an agency standpoint, we've seen all kinds of soft metrics, everything from increased employee productivity by over $4.6 billion a year, equivalent to 26,000 man-years of work. So we've seen some pretty dramatic figures.
And that's increased productivity, and you obviously save on the rent, the mm-hmm. footprint that you need to have and that kind
$850 million in annual real estate, electricity and related costs, $2.3 billion in annual absenteeism, $3.1 billion in annual employee turnover, because you can now keep a more mobile workforce in place, improve continuity of operations, improve work-life balance, and better address the needs of families, parents, and senior caregivers. Avoid the brain drain effect of retiring boomers by allowing them to work flexibly. The list goes on and on. If you really sit down and take a look at it, the opportunity cost of not doing it is really, in my opinion, and from what we've seen in terms of the research and private sector data, is this is happening. You can't avoid it. It's you can get on the bus or get hit by it.
Well, it seems to me, you know, 10, 20 years ago, teleworking wasn't as much of an option, and today it is because of technology. Can you talk a little bit, Cindy, about what an agency has to do, to make telework an option for their employees from a technology point of view?
Sure. I mean, we really have to take a look at the equipment. What do your employees need to be able to work remotely? Do they need one computer model where employees have a laptop, VPN connection, remote connection, and what will your infrastructure look like? It really depends, and it's by agency. GSA has put out some guidance that we have on our site, which offers recommendations to technology. So I would definitely recommend checking out GSA's guidance on the technology.
And it's, I think, For most employees who are somewhat tied to their computer when they're in the office, it's going to be at a minimum remote access and a BlackBerry and maybe a printer and that kind of thing. And so there is an upfront cost with teleworking, but it seems like, you know, ultimately a savings. That, I mean, I assume, Paul, when you talk about the cost savings, you factored in the additional costs that an agency would have to have an effective telework.
Yeah, there's always an upfront cost to every type of new type of work environment. But the bottom line is that people are your best investment. And if the intellectual property is more valuable than the actual real estate, it'd be wise to invest in people, less real estate. So I think all those pan out very, very well.
Our guests today on Fed Talk are Cindy Otten and Paul Rousen. We're talking about telework. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host. We're talking to Cindy Outen and Paul Rousen about telework. Give us a call, 1-877-936-9333, or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Cindy, tell us a little bit about the new legislation. How does that change things?
Sure. Well, if you look at the existing legislation, which was Public Law 106-346, it basically said if you have an eligible telework population, let them telework. And that law was about 2000, and that was about it for the guidelines. This bill clearly has more, clearly has more guidance. It requires agencies to set up policy, make sure all employees are eligible or know of their eligibility. It has a telework managing officer
position. It seems almost like the new law sets a presumption that you will be eligible to telework unless there's a reason not to be.
It does let employees know you will be, management will talk to you about your eligibility. There's a huge group where we talked in the beginning about, there's a huge eligible population and clearly less than 10% are teleworking. So why is there such a gap? And do employees even know if they're eligible? And we find that they don't even know. So it sets up where management has to have that conversation.
And having a telework managing officer is going to be very key, I would think. It's going to raise the visibility of telework and give access to the agency head and that kind of thing and make the program work.
Absolutely. Some of the best federal telework programs have already in place a senior level official. They've dedicated time to managing or training employees, training management, setting up the programs, and their programs are extremely successful. And I think that this law mirrors what some of the best federal programs have been doing.
Yeah, Paul, one of the things, you know, I'm general counsel of the Senior Executives Association, and we did a survey about a year and a half ago of GS 14s and 15s about whether they wanted to come into the SES. And the number one detractor for coming into the SES in our survey was work-life balance. And it seems to me that teleworking contributes to a work-life balance. It might be difficult for a senior executive to to telework anything more than occasionally. But what's your do you have research or information about work-life balance, how important it is, and some of the work-life balance techniques that agencies can use?
Well, first of all, what we've learned is that top performers and senior top performers value workplace flexibility probably even more than anyone else, and they're coming to expect it, especially in the private sector. So we've seen for quite a long time that someone who's a senior vice president in a private sector company has flexibility. They can go and work and manage people from a distance, manage people remotely, come in and out of the office frequently.
So you're saying that the senior executive service in the federal government could be telework eligible and perhaps should be?
Well, I think it's, first of all, trust goes both ways. And when you're not in the office and you can work remotely, you're telling your employees that you don't need to be around and looking at them either. You need to set an example.
And it's been a long time since I worked for the government, but my memory is when I was in the government employee, I was constantly in meetings all the time, and there was that interaction. Of course, meetings can be done remotely as well, but it takes a different way of looking at your workday.
Here's the bottom line, Bill. When there's a value to managers to work remotely themselves and to telework, and the value is it develops a very, very important key and valuable skill. When you can manage people remotely yourself and not be present in the room and influence their work and outcomes, you really become a much better manager. So there's a value to the government to allow senior executives to encourage them as well to practice what they are also trying to drive as a work-life benefit in their organizations.
So the work-life balance, from what I'm hearing you say, is to a large degree, is about flexibility.
Yep.
And of course, flexibility would include at least some sort of telework strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, Paul, what your organization has done about the work-life balance issue?
Well, I think the first thing that we've done is, remember, we are a not-for-profit association that, first of all, develops the professionals in HR that are actually leading, developing, and measuring and monitoring these processes. So we have a work-life certified professional certification, one that I possess myself. And I'm finding that what's really nice to see is the federal government is investing in its own HR. We're seeing probably the fastest group of employees who are coming to us for certifications. They're coming from the federal government. And I think this investment strategy is really starting to pay off, because even in these classes, we're seeing people meet each other for the first time from the different agencies, and they're realizing that they can team up. And before, they may have been working in silos. So I think there's some real synergy taking place. And I'd go back to another thing that I would like to mention about managers who are trying to manage employees one-on-one on these telework agreements. The other trend we're seeing in the private sector that's an emerging trend that's making telework work successfully is not for a manager to focus so much on the one-on-one contract, but to really set up flexible work teams, because the teams then start to bear some of the accountability that you might otherwise put the pressure on just the manager and an employee one-on-one. And that doesn't scale well. And second of all, we found that it's much more realistic for teams to work together, and it promotes teamwork in an environment where you don't have one employee covetous or jealous of another employee, because they're all working and thinking like a team.
That's very interesting. It's a whole different way of thinking about how to manage your employees. And Cindy, do you think is this starting to happen in the federal government? Are managers starting to think this way, to be able to manage their employees remotely and do what Paul was talking about, where they can have teams that would work together even from remote locations?
Absolutely. I mean, originally, telework was positioned as the squiggly line issue for employees. It was a great value for employees, but managers didn't really see the what's in it for me. Right now, we're seeing how managers are saying they're starting to see the results of it, and they're starting to see best practices. And this is one of the things that Telework Exchange does, is try to showcase other agency best practices. Here's a great example of how other management groups and teams have been able to build a very robust telework program. And managers are starting to say that's great, good productivity, great efficiency, and it's really working for them as well.
Now, one of the you mentioned best examples, and one of those that I don't know if it's a best example yet or not, but it got some publicity, is the OPM's program, the ROWE program. I think it's pronounced ROWE, R-O-W-E, mm-hmm. Results Only Work Environment. Can either of you talk about that, what it is, and how it's doing?
Sure. So as much as I guess I know, the results only work environment, and I believe that that was started last year, beginning of the last year. But it's the idea of taking some of their employees and moving it to kind of no boundaries, flexible work arrangement where everyone is remote. And I think that this was an example of something that was done in the private sector for Best Buy that worked really well. And so they're testing it out in the government to see if it's something that this group could do and would work well with.
And so basically you could work whenever you wanted as long as you got certain accomplishments done. Didn't even have to work your 80 hours per pay period, or is there some, because that's a federal law that you got to work 80 hours per pay period. How is that monitored with the ROE program?
You're exactly right. With the it focuses on results only, and I don't know specifically the details, to be quite honest, with the ROE program. It's a variation of telework. Telework is a bit different. Now, we usually focus more on telework. So, but we're excited to hear what OPM, the results of the program are when they have it.
ROE is basically anytime, anywhere, just get the job done. Which is really an interesting, very interesting concept. Paul, are you optimistic it's going to work?
Well, once again, the first thing I like to say is that, you know, OPM did something, and and I can't comment whether or not I think ROE will work or not, because that still remains to be seen. I think the fact that I think it is noteworthy that OPM is practicing on itself versus another agency. So they're leading by example. So I give them credit for doing anything to move the ball forward, and I think that's an important move that they've made.
Yeah, and Paul, let me follow up with a point you made earlier, and you keep referring to the fact that World at Work is not just having an emphasis on the federal government, also the private sector. Do you have experience about telework in the private sector, or who's ahead, the federal government or the private sector, and is it working in the private sector?
I would like to say that I don't think the federal government gets enough credit for some of the unsung flexible work arrangements that it's had. You know, we talked about the Patent and Trade Office as being a shining example, of which it is, of telework. But quite frankly, if you think about it, the intelligence community has many, many remote workers that are working by trust in foreign locations. And these agencies have set up a culture already that trusts the employee who may not be in sight or out of sight for long periods of time. They've also blended together a work-life support for their organizations to compensate families and employees for the time that their workers are away. So there are some shining examples that I don't think the private sector can even compete with in terms of workplace flexibility and remote working. So let's just say that by their very missions, they have distinguished themselves well beyond what they'll ever get credit for. But in the private sector, we've seen some organizations actually leverage what they do well. For example, Intel, IBM, they've learned to distribute their workforce highly. Booz Allen Hamilton, for example, has a huge effort going forth right now in which their organization has realized that their most important asset is their intellectual capital, and they need to have that capital fluid and mobile. So actually the office is a cost and an anchor in terms of their mobility and ability to deploy resources. So they'd rather have people be working remotely and be able to respond anywhere, anytime, any place. So there's some good examples out there, and the savings have been put where the savings have been put into investments where it really matters, and that's into the workforce. I think that's the kind of culture that the worker in the future wants to work for.
And it is spurring competition among telework is very much seen as a top benefit in both private sector job seekers and public sector. So it's a great balance for, I mean, it's spurring competition. There was a great a quote from a gentleman who said, let my competitors not offer telework because I'll take their employees, paraphrasing, so to speak.
And if in this era, we're just starting of pay freezes for federal employees, how important is an agency's telework program to recruiting new talent? Either of you have a theory on that?
Huge.
I mean, it's what's going to make them competitive, I would think.
I think in the next 2 years, with pay frozen, and there being an uncertain economic future and the job market being volatile still, I think that workplace flexibility in the federal government will be an area where, if focused upon, will be a huge, huge opportunity for the federal government to even further demonstrate best practices.
Yeah, Cindy, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And aside from all the other drivers we were talking about, there's a series of even more newer drivers. Feds Hire Vets is a great example of an effort being led by OPM Director John Barry, hiring veterans, hiring Americans with disabilities. All of this has a great telework angle. And we've done quite a bit of research on leveraging telework to recruit veterans.
Yeah, think about this, Bill. What if a gas goes to $5 a gallon? And you have people who've been moved around offices and they're now commuting greater distance, and you were to allow them not to spend $5 on gas 2 years from now when pay is still frozen. You know, the person may not leave the federal government because gas goes to $5 and they can't afford that commute and it's chewing into their income. But think about how much more engagement you'll get out of that employee that says, you know what, I think it's fine for you to telecommute, save the money on gas, work from home, be more productive.
Okay, we're going to stop and take one last break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion about telework with Paul Rowson and Cindy Outen. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good, which brings me to the big news. Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
And most around 40 tells me that, man.
This is Bill Bransford on Fed Talk. We're talking about telework with Cindy Outen and Paul Rowson. If you'd like to join our discussion, please give us a call, 1-877-936-9333. So it's a new day for telework in the federal government with the legislation, with OPM working on guidance. And one of the things we briefly mentioned earlier was training, and it's covered in the legislation. Tell us, Cindy, from your perspective, what's a good training program for telework? What are the elements of it?
Sure. Well, you want to have almost a 360 training program. You want to train managers and you want to train employees, all employees, on what does it mean, how to collaborate and communicate. From a management, the number one issue is how to manage in a remote environment, just as Paul had talked about earlier.
And that's a special skill, I'm gathering. I mean, you don't just learn that overnight. You have to practice it.
Absolutely. And and then from a teleworker standpoint, you really have to talk to them about expectations. What is it expected? And what are the parameters in the telework program? What are the do's and don'ts of the policy? We've heard even specific examples of, you know, when you're teleworking, what's the expectations of working in the business hours and answering phone calls and emails from coworkers or constituents? And then really understanding what does it mean to collaborate with employees who maybe aren't in that telework environment.
Yeah, I've had some experiences where I've called federal agencies and asked for a particular employee, and the response I get back is, oh, so-and-so is teleworking today. And I will tell you, as a taxpayer member of the public, that's not what I want to hear. What I want to hear is he or she will be right with you, and then they connect to them to their remote location, because the technology exists to do that, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, teleworkers really should be a back-end function where it is really transparent to citizens or your customers, where they don't see if someone's teleworking. And technology, absolutely. You can work anywhere, anytime with the technology.
And also, I would imagine the training would include learning to use the technology that allows the remote access.
Absolutely. Help desk support. What do you do in certain situations? Who do you call if you're down or your network? Yeah. How do you handle security training? Is huge. We haven't talked about security. How do you handle data in a remote environment? Are you allowed to print certain things? Handling thumb drives. A lot of this goes into
security. And that is all part of the training.
Absolutely. Yeah. Teleworkers are very much trained for how to securely handle data. I think that the biggest group that I think is an issue is unofficial teleworkers who work and don't maybe necessarily have that security training on how to handle data.
And what about the cybersecurity issues, Paul? I mean, it seems like that's a big problem for the government in general. When you go remote, doesn't that add to it? How does an agency deal with that?
Well, I think this is why it points out that there's a couple of key people that need to be involved in it. This is not just an HR issue and an HR program. Really, to make telework work, you have to have the support and the involvement of your chief technology officer, your person who's doing your space planning. You need to think about all of the elements that go into keeping those documents secure. And once again, the private sector has dealt with these same issues, maybe not on the same risk level, but if you think about people working remotely for Charles Schwab, for a hospital, you've got healthcare organizations that are passing HIPAA-protected patient information around. Right. So there's really been some very, very good work around this. And the good news is the technology companies are absolutely seeing this as a huge opportunity for their own growth in terms of developing these infrastructures to protect this type of information. So the bottom line is that the need is driving the solution here.
And the federal sector labor unions seem to really have a strong interest in telework. They've been a big supporter of it. What do you see the role of the unions as an agency develops a telework policy and actually implements it?
Sure, but union involvement is one of your top key stakeholders from the beginning. And there's actually a federal government executive order that requires union in any kind of HR management labor issue. So when agencies are building out their telework programs, especially with this law, they need to bring in unions from the start and make sure that they're a part of the discussions from the get-go.
As a lawyer, one of the issues that jumps to the top of my mind when I think about telework is the Federal Employee Compensation Act, workers' comp. Somebody is working from home and they trip on their carpet in their office and they hurt themselves. Are they eligible for workers' comp? And how is this handled in telework? Is it an issue that anybody cares about? Or
it's been brought up before, and I'm trying to think of specific examples. I know agencies, some of the top agencies have policies on how to handle workman's comp. So I would definitely defer to some of the top best practices on how they've handled
it. One of the things I've heard is an employee has a specifically defined area where they're supposed to work, and that's part of the telework agreement that Paul talked about earlier. And if they're outside that, then they're not covered. If they're inside it, they are, and during the time period that they're supposed to be working and all of that. So I guess there's some coverage, but there's some limits it as well.
And just as two questions we've actually even had just this week is looking at taxes. That's definitely a big issue from even the private sector side is looking at.
Where do you pay your taxes depending on where you work?
From an employee and an employer.
The state local government taxes.
Yeah, that's a definitely a hot issue we've seen.
And I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, and that may be litigated for a while. So the other issue I've heard about that may affect some employees who telework is locality pay. Especially if they telework 100% at their home and they're outside the higher locality pay where their home office is, they might actually have a pay reduction. So these are things that OPM is grappling with, I think, from what I've heard. And do you either of you have an idea that what kind of guidance OPM is going to give on the new legislation and when it may come out?
I don't. I did hear it would be maybe around the March timeframe on guidance, right, if not before. But I know that they're working hard on
that.
There's
like a 180-day deadline or something for telework policies to be in place?
For eligibility, correct. So, and our big spring town hall meeting that we have for the federal government, we'll have in April, we'll directly talk about some of these issues to help agencies along have some of the best practices.
Why don't you take a moment to plug your program a little, how people can sign up for it,
what it is? They can go to the teleworkexchange.com website. We just actually launched the registration and the website this week. It's April 28th at the Ronald Reagan Building. The fall event, we had more than 750 people come to the event. Majority of them are federal government. And it's, for government and hearing from peers on best practices, how they've gotten, you know, how they've connected with unions, how they've dealt with some of these issues. So I encourage anybody that's developing a program or wanting to hear from other agencies, it'd be a great event.
So you hear best practices, challenges, things like that.
Yeah. So. And we look at both technology and management and policy.
All right, Paul, if somebody wants to learn about World at Work, any programs you have, it's your chance to give your website and all that.
Sure. Well, anyone can visit worldatwork.org. It's www.worldatwork.org, spelled just like it sounds. And there, if you come to our site, you can drill down and find a whole host of resources. We have toolkits for managers, toolkits for employees, and most importantly, we have resources for training for the HR professional who has to lead these functions within their organization.
And you're not just about telework.
No. As a matter of fact, there's probably one of the best comprehensive guidelines, pamphlets on workplace flexibility that I've ever seen there. And I noticed it when I first joined the organization. It's called Workplace Flexibility, Innovation, and Excellence. And I think it says a lot. And I'd be more than happy to get a copy to Fed Talk Radio to publish on the website if they'd like to make it sticky. You can go right to the site and get the pamphlet. And I think it would benefit managers, employees, and even the agency leadership.
And that flexibility is something that's, with the federal government, with all of its rules and regulations and procedures, sometimes hard to find. It takes a little bit of extra work to figure out a way to make the workplace flexible.
I wish that I had this when I was first designing these programs, because it would have saved me skinning my knees and my organization a lot of trials and tribulations.
All right, Paul, have you all taken a look at who is teleworking today? What's a typical teleworker look like?
Well, our data shows from a recent Telework Trendlines survey, and we've got a new one coming out very shortly, which is a more comprehensive report that will appear in March-April timeframe, and that will be important to release that information. But in our 2009 Telework Trendlines, which we did with the Derringer Research Group, which covered an estimated 100 million employees who were teleworking at least one day a month in 2010, that this data showed that most telecommuters were male, under age 55, but predominantly focused around the 40-year-old age group, that they were college graduates and living in a household earning $75,000 or more per year.
Okay, that's an interesting profile. Cindy, what advice do you have as we move forward with telework? What advice do you have for federal employees who may want to telework, to make it a success?
Sure. Well, first off, you have to have the conversation with management. You have to build your case for telework. This isn't an entitlement, and you have to remain flexible when you do communicate with management and understand.
Yeah, like you have to come in. If an important meeting that they want face-to-face, you have to be
absolutely
willing to come
in. Absolutely.
You
have to be flexible and be able to do that. Face-to-face time is still critical, and we're not discouraging people to go completely remote, never see anybody face-to-face. So just be flexible in that type of environment.
And Paul, what about for managers? What advice would you give managers as they work through these new telework programs, which are coming to every federal agency?
I think I would tell every manager just to be prepared to look for the benefits that they will realize. Really think about, is this investment that I'm making, this risk that I'm taking in my mind, is this going to ultimately have a payout? Am I going to be able to attract the best people, keep the best people, motivate the best people, and make sure that I get the mission done? And when you set up agreements like that and build them around trust, I think work's a lot more fun.
Okay. And for both of you, just a few seconds to kind of wrap up. For agencies in general, as they develop their telework policies, what do you think the most important aspects of those telework policies will be?
Sure, absolutely. Well, once you develop your telework policy, you need to make sure you test it. You make sure that employees understand the provisions behind it, and then test it for business continuity situations.
Paul?
Well, I think the first thing they need to do is begin at the beginning and do an environmental scan and a needs assessment of what their people actually want and desire the most out of these programs. Because you may codify or put things into legislation, but that doesn't mean that you can make the horse drink the water. So the most important thing you can do to really be flexible for your workers is find out really what is most important to them, and then work through your policies that have been put in place to make that work.
Okay. Many thanks to Cindy Auten and Paul Rousen for a great show on telework this morning. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us on Fed Talk. Remember that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.